Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, the Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Monahans News for Thursday, February 27th, 2020. Front page. Sheriff candidates answer cues about chief deputy, sand haulers, officer misconduct. By Christy Sullivan, staff writer. The three candidates for Ward County Sheriff, Jaime Ibarra, Joe Collazo, and Farin Valle, all participated in a candidate forum on Friday, January 21st at the Ward County Event Center. After a brief introduction by all attendees, moderator and Monahans Chief of Police, Billy Riley, explained the candidates would each have 3 minutes to respond to 5 of 9 prepared questions. At the end of the forum, audience questions were answered. The candidates were also given a chance to rebut an opponent's answers. The last question of the night was, according to Riley, the most asked question coming from the audience. If elected, who would you use as a chief deputy? Candidate Valle said, "I'm pretty sure everyone knows who I would pick as a chief deputy. It is obvious it would be Michael Franco. He is my captain right now, my second in command, and my right-hand man. Franco is an individual I depend on a lot, no matter what the issue is. I'm confident that by assigning Franco as my chief deputy, I am making the right decision. I know he could do the job." Candidate Collazo said, "I would pick whoever was the most qualified for the position by having everyone apply who wanted the job and go through the hiring process. Also, I think it is important to consult with the other deputies on the decision. They are the ones who know what is going on within the department. The majority of the deputies at the department are qualified for the job." Candidate Ibarra said, "I do not have a chief deputy in mind right now, but choosing a chief deputy is very important. It has to be someone who is qualified, someone who shares the same views as the sheriff, someone who I can trust, and someone who wants the job. There are several at the department right now who are qualified. A department this size does not need a lot of administration, such as lieutenants, captains, and sergeants. If you do, who is taking care of the people? Once the department grows, then it makes sense to name other leaders, but you cannot have too many chiefs and not enough Indians to run a successful department." Another audience question concerned the sand trucks parked all over the county with the owner-operator sleeping in the trucks. Candidate Ibarra said, "Unfortunately, there is not much the county can do if they are parked legally, unless they are blocking the intersection or roadway where the public cannot safely make a turn. This problem falls down to the citizen letting us know if the truck is in violation, and then we'll make them move. I wish there was more that we could do. The commissioners could put up no parking signs, which makes it enforceable." Candidate Valle said, "Under the transportation code, deputies can enforce the parking if it is obstructing the view or if a vehicle has been unattended for more than 48 hours. They can be asked to move. The biggest problem is the citizens reported the vehicles. Unfortunately, we do not have any county codes or ordinances to enforce, although we can write a citation for littering." Candidate Collazo said, "The other two candidates covered everything I had written down to say, but I will add I would like the state to change the law where they are forced to take a defensive driving class with a ticket so they will drive more safely around town." Another audience question was, "What did you do to improve the sheriff's department while working at the department?" Candidate Valle said, "Loyalty first off. I've been there 27 years, and I am still there. I gained a lot of knowledge and met a lot of good people along the way. I've given the department my leadership by guiding my guys to the best of my ability. I was also able to secure raises and new equipment for the deputies. I've showed younger deputies how to be a leader. If I'm elected as sheriff, I feel I can do a lot more. Candidate Collazo said, I was assigned to investigations when I worked with the department. I also was essential in getting the department to quit selling cigarettes in the back of the jail and not allowing smoking inside the jail due to a health hazard. I've also recovered hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of property. Candidate Ibarra said, It is simple. I was there. Some officers hate to work sexual assault cases, but I worked a lot of those during my time at the department, which is something I gave to the department that other deputies have not. The final audience question asked was, How do you suppose you could handle the day-to-day operations within the department without or with having supervision experience? Candidate Ibarra said, It all comes down to the staff, which is the most important thing. The department hasn't had a chief deputy in a long time, but has had two lieutenants, which caused a lot of conflict. You have to have the right staff in place, such as chief deputy, captain, and lieutenant, all of whom you can trust. Candidate Valle said, I have all the experience running the day-to-day operations of the department. I started with the department as a dispatcher and worked my way up through the department from there. I know all the moving parts and what it consists of, and I know what it takes to keep the department running. I know I can do the job and have the experience to do it. Candidate Collazo said, It all starts with respect. If your deputies respect the sheriff and are well trained, he will have no problem. The years of experience you obtain as a patrolman is the experience you need to run a department. You do not have to have a lot of years' experience as a supervisor to be a good supervisor. It is not that hard. The right person will gain their experience as they go. The first prepared question of the night was, Are you satisfied with current operational procedures in place while prisoners are in court or waiting for their time to see the judge or counsel? If not, what are your plans on implementing change? Candidate Valle said, I'm satisfied with the current system we have in place because all the inmates are secured by leg shackles and belly chains every time they are transported to and from the courthouse. Valle added, In the future, I would like to see a holding cell added to the inside the courthouse, although I know it will be extremely expensive, and courtroom security is a big issue to me. So I would like to have additional courtroom staff, such as an additional bailiff. Candidate Collazo responded to the same question by saying, I'm glad some improvements have been made in procedures, but if elected, I would utilize the tunnel more, which runs underneath the road between the jail and the courthouse, for prisoner transport, because there is a risk involved of inmates in the road when they tell their family members when they have court. Collazo added, I would like the inmate's lawyer to visit the inmate in jail when they are appointed, instead of waiting until they are in the courtroom, because that's when problems arise with inmates getting past contraband. Ibarra answered the question by saying, I'm not happy with the procedures right now. I would like to see the addition of another bailiff, and there have been times when there are seven inmates in court, and it's too hard for two people, the constable and bailiff, to watch seven inmates. The safety of our bailiff should be our priority. He added, The sheriff is responsible for the safety of everyone at the courthouse first, and the inmates second, and I feel procedures need to be changed. Candidate Collazo was up first to answer question two, which asked, If elected, what would you do if one of your deputies was involved in any situation where he, she, came afoul of the law? First off, something like that could not be tolerated, and if the individual was in conflict with the law, that person should not be a deputy. The laws have to be enforced equally, which is something I have always done, Collazo said. Candidate Ibarra said, "We're all humans, deputies are humans, and if they messed up, they messed up. No one is above the law. If an individual is representing the law, including myself, and a crime is committed, I would expect punished or incarcerated if need be. Sheriff's deputies are held to a higher standard because they represent the law, so they should know better, and if elected, I would make sure they are held accountable. Along with that is the sheriff. He, too, should be held accountable if an infraction is made." Ibarra added, "An investigation would be initiated, and the deputy would be placed on administrative leave until the investigation was completed." Candidate Valle said, "If it ever came to my attention that a member of my staff was involved in some type of criminal activity, I would obtain the complaint from the complainant, place the individual on administrative leave with pay, and begin an internal investigation. If a criminal act was committed, then it would immediately be turned over to the Texas Rangers, because this is the proper way to handle those type of situations. If it is a policy infraction, that would be handled internally." Valle added, "This is one of the things I will not tolerate, but unfortunately it does occur. I believe in our staff 100%. I have their back, and I know they have mine." Question 3 asked the candidates, "What do you think about nepotism policies? Good or bad, and why?" Candidate Ibarra said, "I'm not for nepotism. All it is a favor for somebody. In a department as small as ours, nepotism is especially a problem because if something were to happen within the family, a department could be out 2 or 3 people." Ibarra added, "You want to make sure the people you hire are qualified, not just because they are related to you or a friend. Hire off of experience and qualifications and not a close relative or close friend. I'm not sure of the Ward County nepotism policy, but if elected, I will learn what it is and work from there." Candidate Valle said, "The Ward County nepotism policy states elected or appointed officials are prohibited from hiring second or third degree relatives that he or she supervises. I believe the county's nepotism policies are good by protecting the integrity of the department. I never want the appearance of favoritism in any department. We currently have several family members who work for my department, but none of the supervisors are directly supervising their family members, with the exception of myself." Valle added, "My jail administrator is related to me, but our relations do not fall under the nepotism charts or guidelines. I do believe in the policy and back up the county nepotism policy 100%. Candidate Collazo said, "Nepotism policies could be good or bad depending on the policy, because it could prohibit you from hiring someone who is highly qualified due to their relationship to you. As long as there is no conflict, I'm okay with it, but the policy should be revisited." Question 4 asked, "What is your vision for the sheriff's department moving forward if elected, and how does your vision differ from your time as a member of the department?" Candidate Valle said, "My vision for the department is simple. I want to provide the citizens of Ward County the best trained and dedicated men and women to serve the needs of our ever-growing communities. I also envision the law enforcement center big enough to house the constant rise of inmates we are seeing and to provide state-of-the-art equipment for our dispatch department." Valle added, "I would like to eventually see the law enforcement center combined with the Monahans Police Department. I think we could work alongside with each other and make good things happen. Candidate Collazo said, My vision is this, which is the criminal tool as well as an investigating tool, while holding up a cell phone, and I'm talking about cybercrime. This is the future I see the department going, and I believe our department is about 10 years behind. Statistics show 3 cybercrimes occur every second, which come to 1.7 billion crimes, which should not be tolerated. Collazo added, I would like to see a program launched at the high school where a student could take law enforcement classes, and upon graduation they could be sponsored at the academy. This would allow a good pool of people to hire from later on. Candidate Ibarra said, My vision for the department is to have better community relations. A lot of the citizens do not know our deputies, which is something that needs to be done quickly and be more visible in the county, which leads into needing more deputies. Our county is booming, and sure, most will be gone soon, but as of right now, we need more deputies. Ibarra added, The deputies need to be seen. Being seen will deter crime and will make the community better, and given the chance, I think I can prove it. The final prepped question of the night asked, Community policing certainly provides opportunities to foster positive relationships between the agencies and citizens. As a countywide law enforcement agency, what programs or events can you foresee being beneficial for your department and the citizens? Candidate Collazo said, I would love to have a community relations officer put in place, as well as a crime prevention and drug awareness program at the schools. Another thing would be to reestablish the resident deputies throughout the county. Candidate Ibarra said, I think it would be proactive to get the community involved with the department and believe it would deter crime. I think it would make the citizens more willing to work with and talk with deputies, which it will make it easier for the department to fight crime. I would like to see more officers at the schools, such as the sheriff's office and police department placing officers at the school. I believe it all starts at the bottom from kindergarten and on up, and get more involved with them while they are young. Candidate Valle said, The department is currently in the process of creating a public information education forum to be held quarterly, which will allow citizens to voice their concerns of any criminal activities. Also, implementing the Neighborhood Watch program and the Blue Santa program, which is similar to the Toys for Tots program. Chief Billy Riley has done a tremendous job in getting the community involved with the police department, and we would like to mirror that and create a good image with the community for the sheriff's department. Early voting for the March primary elections began Tuesday, February 18th, and will continue until Friday, February 28th. Anyone who wants to cast their vote early can still do so between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the county clerk's office located on the first floor of the Ward County Courthouse. Election Day is March 3rd. Ward County deputies recover over 2 pounds of meth in Wickett. By Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Ward County Sheriff deputies seized approximately 968 grams of methamphetamine during 2 separate routine traffic stops and during the search of a home, all in Wickett, Tuesday. The dope carries an estimated street value of $90,000. According to Ward County Sheriff Farron Valle, around 12:59 p.m., deputies conducted a traffic stop for a traffic violation on a green 2003 Chevrolet Tahoe near 9th and O'Brien Streets. Upon contact with the driver, Joe Andrew Garcia of Kermit, the deputy obtained consent to search the vehicle, where several small containers with a white crystalline residue, suspected to be methamphetamine and drug paraphernalia, were located, he said. After an additional search of the vehicle by the deputy, approximately 119 grams, or 4.3 ounces of suspected methamphetamine was found. Garcia was placed into custody and taken to the Ward County Jail on charges of possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, 4 grams or more, but less than 200 grams. An additional 253 grams of suspected methamphetamine was located inside the vehicle while at the sheriff's department, he added. If convicted, Garcia could face 5 to 99 years or life confinement in prison, or a fine up to $10,000. In an unrelated traffic stop, 2 miles north on Farm Road 1219, around 1:02 p.m., deputies stopped a 1997 white Chevrolet pickup. Deputies made contact with the driver, Juan Perez, of Eagle Pass, and as the traffic stop continued, the deputy had a reasonable belief that major criminal activity was afoot, Valle said. When questioned by the deputy, Perez admitted to having a small amount of methamphetamine in his pockets. The deputy conducted a probable cause search of Perez and located 2.5 grams of suspected methamphetamine, he said. During a subsequent probable cause search of the vehicle, deputies discovered approximately 493 grams, or 1 pound and 1 ounce, of suspected methamphetamine. Perez was also arrested on a charge of possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, over 400 grams. If convicted, Perez would face 10 to 99 years in prison and or a fine up to $100,000. As of press time, neither Garcia or Perez had seen a judge to set bond. Late Tuesday evening, sheriff's deputies, along with the assistance of Monahans Police Department, executed a search warrant at 207 Brady in Wickett. Upon execution of the warrant, deputies and officers located a total of 3.7 ounces, or 103 grams, of suspected methamphetamine, he said. Tiffany Rivas of Wickett was charged with possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, 4 grams but less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony. If convicted, Rivas could face from 2 up to 20 years in prison or a fine up to $10,000. Two other subjects were located in the residence but were released, he added. Our officers did an exceptional job today in these drug seizures. I believe that the deputy's presence in Wickett has made a huge difference in drug and criminal activity within that community. We will continue to make our police presence known within Ward County's communities, Valle said. Council approves bid for lift station, moves on rezoning request for Desert Ridge addition, by Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Monahan City Council members met in regular session on Tuesday and took no time at all to work their way through the agenda, approving resolutions for lift station updates, canceling the May 2nd election, and a replat of the East Monahan subdivision. Council members accepted a bid from L. Howard Construction, which was one of only two submitted, for the upgrades to the Kayla Street lift station, the final lift station in need of repairs. The bid, for $338,664.18, will pay for a full upgrade to the industrial sewage lift station. The bid came in $62,000 lower than the engineer's estimated cost for the project, which is unusual, City Manager Rex Tay said. The city currently has 6 lift stations, and 5 of the 6 have been upgraded. Once construction begins, it should be completed within a month's time, he added. Along with Tay, Mayor David Cutbirth was present, along with council members Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carrell, Richard Hawkins, and Ivy Valenzuela. Rudy Hernandez was absent. City Attorney Alan Nichols was also present. A public hearing was called on the rezoning request from the Monahans Economic Development Corporation. The request to rezone the East Monahans subdivision, Desert Ridge Edition, which includes blocks 7 through 17, all adjacent rights of way, all of blocks 18 through 19, the interior street and alley right of way, and the remainder of the 174.053 acres tract of lands out of Section 50 from a R1 district to a R5 district, otherwise north of 12th Street. According to City of Monahans Code of Ordinances, R1 district is a one-family dwelling, while R5 zoning allows planned development residential. The rezoning will make the entire area open to development in a more orderly fashion. This will make it a development site. Buyers of the land will be required to take their plans for dwelling back to the Planning and Zoning Board and City Council for approval, Tay said, which will help keep property values up throughout the addition, he added. The hearing was an opportunity to allow residents to have input on the rezoning. Although residents were present for the meeting, no one addressed the council with any questions or concerns. The request was previously approved by the Planning and Zoning Board last week, Tay said. Planning and Zoning Board members include Billy Neese, Gerald Carlson, Arcadia Rivera, Mickey Mitchell, and Kristlyn Neese. In addition to the public hearing, Agenda Item 6 called to approve the first reading of Ordinance 1275 pertaining to the rezoning request, and Item 7 was to act on Resolution 2020-009, which was a replat of the East Monahan subdivision, Desert Ridge Edition. Both were approved as presented. With no challengers to incumbent council members District 1 Rudy Hernandez, District 4 Avi Valenzuela, and District 5 Richard Hawkins, the May 2nd City Council election was canceled by unanimous vote. All incumbents have filed for re-election. In the final actionable item on the agenda, the council voted to donate a 2013 police package Ford Taurus to the Ward County Sheriff's Office. The car is too small to be equipped out for our police officers, and the sheriff's office is needing something more economical to serve as a transport vehicle, Tay said. I think this is a good move for us, because the county has agreed to add a bathroom on the back of the police department for the dispatchers with the leftover supplies from the event center construction, he added. The construction would total around $7,500, and the car is valued at $5,500, so it's a good gesture on the city's part, he said. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, March 10th, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Martinez arrested after trying to stab roommate, by Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Shannon Martinez, 38, of Smithville, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, after he tried to stab his roommate with a knife. According to Ward County Sheriff Farron Valle, an off-duty Ward County Sheriff deputy reported that a subject was being chased by a suspect with a knife at 602 First Street in Piote. Deputies learned Martinez was upset over a previous incident with his girlfriend and was destroying items within the travel trailer he shared with the victim, Gustavo Guerra, also of Smithville. Guerra asked Martinez what his problem was and why he was destroying property in the trailer. Martinez then threatened Guerra with a knife, he said. Guerra then left the trailer and asked the neighbor for help removing his belongings from the trailer. Once the neighbor and Guerra returned to the trailer and began removing items from the trailer, Martinez came outside and again threatened to stab Guerra, he said. Guerra began to run down the street and Martinez followed him, swinging the knife in a stabbing motion toward the victim's back, he said. While running from Martinez, Guerra tripped and fell. Another neighbor began to scream at Martinez, and he subsequently backed away from Guerra. Guerra was able to again run from Martinez and ran to the off-duty sheriff deputy's house to ask for help, Valle said. In addition to the aggravated assault charge, Martinez was also arrested on an outstanding felony warrant out of Bastrop County. If convicted, Martinez could face 2 to 20 years in prison and or a fine up to $10,000. Canine pepper spray used to urge suspect out of hiding place, by Christy Sullivan, staff writer. According to Ward County Sheriff Fraren Valle, around 6:58 p.m. on January 20th, deputies responded to a call of a fight in progress at 203 6th Street in Grand Falls. The caller stated a female was fighting with two males, both wearing all black and beanies. Upon arrival, deputies observed a male individual run into the house, he added. Upon questioning, the female, identified as Courtney Marie Hurado, 33, of Grand Falls, told deputies she was fighting with her 13-year-old daughter and not two males. Deputies advised her they saw a male run into the house, and Hurado gave deputies consent to search her residence, he said. With one deputy posted outside the front of the residence, two others went inside to search for the individual. During the course of the search of the home, deputies noticed the smell of marijuana in Hurado's room and subsequently located less than 1 gram of what was suspected to be methamphetamine, along with 2 ounces of marijuana, as well as a man's wallet. Deputies had entered the home twice, and upon the second trip inside, one of the deputies noticed a trash bag over a large vent was positioned different than it was the first time deputies were in the house, Valle said. To be able to look underneath the house, deputies utilized a video scope, which was placed through the vent. The suspect, identified as Anthony Placencio, 37, of Grand Falls, was seen on the video scope laying down. Deputies gave him several verbal commands to come out from underneath the house, but he would not, he said. The K-9 division out of Ector County was called to the scene to help remove Placencio from beneath the house. The reason for calling in Ector County's K-9 division is because the Ward County K-9, Angus, is a single-purpose narcotics dog, and for this incident, we needed an apprehension K-9, which is a dog who will bite, Valle said. Once the K-9 arrived, we told Placencio we would release the dog if he did not come out. He stated he would, but still did not. Deputies subsequently located an additional vent in which they had better access to the suspect. Deputies introduced a small amount of pepper spray and was able to force Placencio out from beneath the house, he said. After running a driver's license check on Placencio, deputies learned he had 2 warrants out of Doña Ana, New Mexico. Only one of the warrants was extraditable, which was a felony warrant on a grand jury indictment for possession of a controlled substance, he said. Placencio was booked for the felony warrant, while Hurado was subsequently arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on the possession of controlled substance Penalty Group 1, a state jail felony, and hinder apprehension prosecution, a Class A misdemeanor. Bond for Hurado was set at $12,500, and she posted the bond and was released. Placencio is currently still in custody, waiting on extradition back to New Mexico. The claim of a second male suspect at the scene could not be substantiated, Valle added. Hello, this is Kay reading the Monahan's News for February 27th, 2020. Obituary. Dwayne L. Welch. Dwayne L. Welch of Monahan's passed away peacefully on February 23rd, 2020. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, February 28th at Harkey Funeral Home, with Dr. Ron Guthrie and John Gambino officiating. Dwayne Welch was born in Gorman, Texas, to Shorty and Cleo Welch on December 3, 1934. Dwayne is preceded in death by his father, Shorty Welch, and his mother, Cleo Merworth Welch, a brother, Daryl Welch, sisters Lee Freimeyer, Jean Luby, Maxine Willis, and Glenda Vedetto, and brothers-in-law David Cook and Billy Hanks, and a grandson, Taylor Davis. He is survived by his wife, Nell Welch, children Debbie Gambino, John, Katina Emmert, Sammy Prieto, and Leslie Welch, brothers Dex Welch, Doris, and Doak Welch, Beverly, sisters Jerry Cook, Judy Guthrie, Ron, and Kay Hanks. He is also survived by his 5 grandchildren as well as 7 great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer, Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. City hears final presentation on waterline, Aurora Seine. The Fort Stockton City Council met Tuesday, February 25th for their bi-monthly meeting to hear a final presentation on the 30-inch waterline. Senior civil engineer Steve Sanovich with Hanson Professional Services Incorporated gave the presentation and said that the line has been operational since last summer. He did the final inspection on Tuesday and checked that the areas surrounding the line were growing vegetation and looked natural. The project cost $3,271,648, which was over the projected amount since the city added the additional 18-inch line. The original projection was $3,182,508. The project took 667 days, and the city will be getting a credit of $33,250 for unused portion of utility conflicts from the project. The council also approved a pay order of $80,085 for the work performed by Nelson Lewis Incorporated, and a final payment for the money the city kept in order to ensure the job would be finished will be $163,582. The contractor really did a good job of keeping costs down, said Sinovitz. It's been an amazing project. I've really enjoyed working with the city of Fort Stockton. In other news, the council agreed on terminating the state and local HIDTA task force agreement between the Drug Enforcement Administration and the Fort Stockton Police Department. Police Chief Robert Lujan said that since 2 of their guys resigned, they need the extra person to go back on patrol. He said once they are fully staffed, they can look back into rejoining. The council approved a vendor agreement for the Comprehensive Energy Assistance Program between the city and the Pecos County Communication Community Action Agency. This will help the elderly and single families with gas assistance. The council agreed to ask TxDOT to do a traffic study on 3 intersections, Hornbeck Boulevard and Highway 18, Hornbeck Boulevard and Highway 285, and Sycamore Street and Dickinson Boulevard. If it justifies a light, it justifies a light, said council member Reuben Falcon. The Fort Stockton City Council meets the 2nd and 4th Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. at 121 West 2nd Street. Here's a follow-up from a story we read last week from the Fort Stockton Pioneer. Initial DPS report says bus driver did not yield right-of-way. A collision between a Fort Stockton Independent School District bus and a Republic Services sanitation truck resulted in minor injuries February 25th on FM 1053 near 40th Lane. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety's initial report, bus number 27 was turning off 40th Lane at about 7:25 a.m. when the driver, Elva Rodriguez, 62, of Fort Stockton, failed to yield the right-of-way to the trash truck, which was traveling north on FM 1053. The truck driver, Maximo Juarez III, 43, of Alpine, attempted to avoid impact. An initial DPS report only includes information gathered immediately after an incident and does not reflect a completed investigation, which is still in progress. The bus was carrying 18 students and one driver, according to a statement from the FSISD, which added that the district released the students from the scene to their parents or guardians. The DPS reported that 12 of the students were taken by private auto to Pecos County Memorial Hospital evaluation. None of the students were transported from the scene by ambulance. Both the DPS and FSISD reported the injuries as minor, including cuts, scratches, and bruises. The driver of the truck was transported to PCMH with cuts and a sore knee. Work on officers' quarters halted due to dampness, by Aurora Sane. Work on officers' quarters number 7 at historic Fort Stockton have been halted until the weather warms up. Due to the adobe work, workers need drier air with less moisture. The project that started in October is about halfway finished. Bruce Moore Construction is doing the work. It brought in an adobe expert to help, so the integrity of the 153-year-old building was compromised. The building has been closed for several years and was shifting due to rain and settling over time. Once finished, it will house exhibits for the public. The officers' quarters are a part of historic Fort Stockton near 5th and Rooney Streets. The original fort consisted of 35 buildings, of which only 4 remain today. The work they are looking at would include adding gutters to improve drainage and prevent water from accumulating, fix cracks in the exterior walls, level the building, and extensive adobe work. The cost of the project is going to be $165,340. The original estimate was $150,000. The Convention and Visitors Bureau will be covering the costs. Renovated Theater Takes Center Stage, by Aurora Sane. Over 100 people showed up to the ribbon cutting for the renovated Nelson Street Theater, 102 South Nelson Street, on February 24th. The grand opening celebrated the $2 million project, which started in 2015 and was funded through dozens of contributors, contributions, and grants from organizations, businesses, and community members. Over the evening, people sang their praises for the theater president, Alice Dirksen, and being able to see such a grand project to conclusion. "It is a really, really nice facility," said Mayor Chris Alexander. The vision that Alice had came to life. K4 Construction did the work with the help of a local contractor, Tyler Young, and the owner said it was a pleasure working in Fort Stockton. "He's put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this," said Keith Helpert about Young. "I felt very welcome every time I came here. This is a very friendly town." Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster said that the vision of revitalizing the downtown area is coming to life, and the theater will help tremendously. He also said the community is unique because so many people volunteered to help just because they love the community. "We are so excited," said Sabrina Ruiz with the Downtown Business Association. "This will be a main focal point. Their hard work gives us hope. We have a lot of plans in the works." Andre Madrid, student recruiter and academic advisor with the Midland College Williams Regional Training Center, said this brings new opportunities for his students to volunteer and get involved in different venues. "This adds something else to the community," he said. "Everyone loved the large performing stage and extra seating that will allow for more people to enjoy the shows. It's going to be marvelous," said Allison Hansen. J.B. Gallegos has worked extensively with the theater, helping at every step along the way, and he was happy to see it completed. "We've all worked so hard to see this come to fruition," he said. "I just want to say thank you to everyone who made this possible." Remy Ramos with the Economic Development Corporation, the theater project holds a special place in his heart. "This is very rewarding," he said. "This is my first large-scale project through the EDC. The theater features donors' names on the walls and celebrates everyone who came together for years' worth of construction and planning. It is awesome," said Alexander. "It exceeds my expectations." Everyone echoed the same notion that Fort Stockton came together and supported the theater project. "It's exciting to see how the community got behind a project," said Ramos. "The community made this journey possible," said Dirksen. Here is a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. Ragweed Cowboy Joe. Performances will be Friday, March 27th, seat holders only. Saturday, March 28th, dinner theater. And Sunday, March 29th, 2 p.m. matinee. And 7 p.m. shows on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Ticket information will be released shortly. Hello, this is Michael reading from the Big Ben Sentinel on Tuesday, March 3rd. Government. Mexican official, Ojinaga preparing for trans-migrant route, by Stephen Paulson. Presidio. After months of rumor and speculation, a Mexican official said at a meeting Tuesday night that a trans-migrant route will soon open in Presidio, Ojinaga, and that Ojinaga is already getting ready. That was the main takeaway from Presidio's first international multi-agency workshop on the traveling merchants who buy consumer goods, like used cars in the United States, and sell them back in their home countries, but not in Mexico. Mexico controls the routes for these transmigrants, and the country has long floated the idea of opening such a route at the Presidio Ojinaga port of entry. Those discussions have put Presidio at the front lines of an international trade arrangement that is largely outside the border city's control. Such a route has broad implications for Presidio County and the Big Bend region as a whole. Opponents say it will create logistical, traffic, and safety issues in Presidio and along U.S. Highway 67 up through Marfa. Proponents see it as part of an expanded international trade through the Big Bend region, a trend that also includes a reopened international trade bridge, the bridge improvements at the Presidio Ojinaga port of entry, and the Entrada al Pacifico trade route. Kleinman Consultants, which is organizing the workshops, reached out to several U.S. politicians and public officials at the federal level. None of them came to Tuesday's workshop. That includes officials at the Presidio port of entry, though they did at least share their vision for streamlining trans-migrant traffic through the city. In an email to the city on Tuesday afternoon, Alejandro Leos, assistant port director at the Presidio port of entry, said he was unable to attend this meeting or send a representative, but he agreed transmigrants are an important issue and said the broker processing of paperwork is a critical point in preventing a logjam. He also said officials would implement procedures for the merchants, which could possibly include a 20-vehicle limit for presentation at the port. No other federal officials attended or contributed information to the workshop. It's a problem Presidio Mayor John Ferguson has complained about for months. While the federal government in Mexico is apparently taking a lead on transmigrants, federal officials in the United States are nowhere to be found, he says. "You know what we really need in Presidio?" Ferguson said on Tuesday night. "We need for our federal government to say, we've got your back on this. We need Congressman Hurd to say, we've got your back. But he's not saying that." At city council meetings, and especially at recent ones, Presidio has repeatedly discussed transmigrants, But as the debate has drawn on for months, city leaders and citizens have grown increasingly frustrated. Attempts to plan for trans migrants have been bogged down by side controversies, including one surrounding the city's plan to build a parking lot for the travelers. Meanwhile, city leaders say they are getting little information from Mexico and even less help from the feds and the state. And so, at Presidio's last city council meeting, the city agreed to have a series of workshops on the issue. The goal is to bring together local, federal, and Mexican officials to discuss and plan for a new proposed transmigrant route through Presidio Ojinaga. The first such workshop happened at the Presidio Activity Center on Tuesday evening. When it ended around 3 hours later, participants were about halfway through their agenda and tempers were hotter than ever. Several Mexican officials were present at the meeting. Among them were Melissa Franco, a Mexican social development official based in Ojinaga. She said a transmigrant route through in Ojinaga could open as early as March, but could also get delayed as Mexican officials readied the port. Ojinaga is already getting upgrades, she said. There are plans to build a new highway loop around Ojinaga, and the city is removing street wiring and medians along major roads, including on Avenida Morelos. At first, she said transmigrant traffic will be split between Ojinaga and Los Indios, currently the only approved transmigrant port, until Presidio Ojinaga are ready for all of it. For many years, we've been waiting for a development on both sides of the border, Franco said. The transmigrant route, she said, will detonate business growth. That includes not only brokers for businesses like food sellers and bunkhouses. Presidio City Administrator Joe Portillo pushed back against the idea that transmigrants will bring revenue to the city. He cited his experience meeting transmigrants while working in law enforcement. They didn't stay in a hotel. They do eat, but they can eat very simply, he said. They spend the least amount of money they can. Presidio City and county officials have a more pessimistic take on transmigrants than Franco. They say the route will strain EMS and other city resources and contribute to already long wait times at the port. I'm imagining Christmas holiday constantly, City Council member Irvin Olivas said. County officials worry about strain on the narrow and winding U.S. 67, as well as safety issues. At the meeting, David Beeb, a Presidio County Justice of the Peace, brought up the possibility of crime with transmigrants as victims. After all, he said, they carry cash. Oscar Prado, a Mexican broker in Ojinaga, disagreed. That was completely erroneous, he said. Transmigrants use credit cards. This meeting, like previous ones, was bogged down by debates over the city's proposed transmigrant parking lot. H. Cowan, a representative of Solitaire Homes, repeatedly interjected to express his objections to the plan. At one point, he asked Mayor Ferguson whether he planned to enforce a city parking ordinance. Ferguson said yes. You will have the biggest boondoggle you've ever seen here, and it will be a black mark against the city, Cowan said. Cowan also repeatedly complained that too much of the meeting was happening in Spanish. You need to start learning Spanish, Prado, the Mexican broker, said in English. Crime. Assault on transgender teen prompts shock investigation in Alpine. An Alpine family is exploring legal options after a 15-year-old transgender teenage student at Alpine High School was assaulted off campus. By Stephen Paulson, Alpine. An Alpine family is exploring legal options after a 15-year-old transgender teenage student at Alpine High School was assaulted off campus. The 15-year-old, whose name the Big Bend Sentinel is redacting because he is a minor victim of a crime, was assaulted earlier this month reportedly by a classmate who was upset over the victim's transgender identity. The story quickly circulated on social media, where friends and family members decried what they saw as inaction by the school and authorities. A GoFundMe account was also set up for the alleged victim's family, where the organizer called for justice for the transgender teen. The fundraiser included photos of the transgender boy, which showed him with a bloody nose and a busted lip. It had raised around $2,000 by press time. The controversy stems from an incident that happened at Sul Ross State University on Sunday, February 16th. The transgender teen was on the university's campus when an older student at Alpine High School beat him up, and said Samantha Squalls, the victim's aunt. According to Squalls, the alleged assailant said he had attacked the transgender student because it pisses me off that the transgender teen was trying to be a boy. Another student filmed the attack and posted it on Snapchat, a video-based social media platform, Squalls said. In an interview, Squalls said she was frustrated with what she saw as a lack of action from the Alpine Independent School District and local law enforcement. As soon as he got back to school, other boys have been picking on him, she said of the victim. The school is saying they can't do anything. The identities of any other students involved in the incident have not yet been publicly released, since they are also minors. But the victim's name has come to light on social media. The victim's mother declined to comment. Squalls cited legal advice from the Family Crisis Center of the Big Bend, a local domestic violence nonprofit, which is reportedly helping the family. Reached for comment on Monday, the Family Crisis Center also declined to comment, including to confirm or deny their role in the case. Authorities are being similarly tight-lipped. Alpine police say they're not handling the incident, which happened on Sul Ross campus. And the Brewster County Sheriff's Office could also not release any information, including their involvement in the case, citing the active investigation and the involvement of minors. Kent Dunnigan, director of the University Department of Public Safety at Sul Ross State University, confirmed the details of the incident. A minor was accused of assaulting another minor at the Sul Ross football field, he said. University police were taking the lead on the investigation. But Dunnigan declined to comment on details, including when asked authorities were investigating the incident as a possible hate crime. I'd like to release the incident report and let everybody know what's going on, Dunnigan said. But at this point, we can't release any info. He was waiting on clearance from juvenile justice officials in Brewster County, he said. At press time, the Big Bend Sentinel had not yet seen an incident report. Alpine High School did not respond to a request for comment by press time. In an interview, Becky McCutcheon, superintendent of Alpine ISD, confirmed the basics of the incident. What I can tell you is, two Alpine High School students did have an altercation off campus, she said. It was outside of school hours. When pressed on criticisms that Alpine ISD wasn't taking the situation seriously, McCutcheon said the school was following protocol from the Texas Education Code. The school would be taking a more proactive role in the investigation if the incident had happened at school, she said. It's a different situation because it was off campus, she said. Still, McCutcheon pushed back against the idea that any students had been punished for defending the victim, including rumors that two students were suspended from school after they confronted the alleged assailants. In terms of other students being punished, that's absolutely fabricated and probably taken out of context, McCutcheon said. On Monday, the Brewster County District Attorney's Office had not yet seen an incident report and could not comment on the case. Still, the office said it takes hate crimes very seriously and would pursue a hate crime charge if the facts supported one. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.